Hello and welcome. This is Nancy. I'm reading with you this afternoon from the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette for Wednesday, March 22nd, 2017. Our main headline today has to do with March Madness, and it's the headline is Blame It on Broadway. With arena booked, U of I hits the road. Illinois is the highest seed in tonight's NIT contest against Central Florida. But the Illini won't have home court advantage. Blame the lullaby of Broadway. State Farm Center long ago scheduled the musical 42nd Street for tonight as part of the WCIA 3 Broadway series, bumping the Illini to Orlando, Florida for spring break. Not a bad place to be if you're a college student, but certainly not the team's preference. If the Illini win, they will head to New York's Madison Square Garden for the NIT version of the Final Four. Kevin Alstead, director of State Farm Center, said the Broadway touring show was booked last summer, long before the U of I's postseason fate was known. Obviously, we would have liked to have the game. It's just a matter of scheduling, he said. It's a continual evolution as far as booking. We're a multi-purpose facility. That's the thing everybody needs to remember. State Farm Center is co-managed by Athletics and the Student Affairs Office on campus. Students pay about $212 a year in fees to support the arena, which hosts everything from monster truck shows to rock concerts to commencement ceremonies, in addition to men's and women's basketball. Alstead juggles student programming with athletic dates, including football games, so a concert doesn't fall alongside a night game at Memorial Stadium because of the parking crunch. Currently, he's lining up basketball for next fall, but has to wait for the final Big Ten schedule to come out in late summer. It's a constant whirlwind of when you're grabbing dates to set aside for different events for campus athletics to consider, he said. The Division of Intercollegiate Athletics knew that the arena was open for the NIT's first two rounds, but that hosting a third game would be an issue, said spokesman Kent Brown. We knew in advance that this was a possibility if Illinois State were to lose and we were to advance, Brown said. The ISU Redbirds were a number one seed and would have hosted the Illini tonight if they hadn't lost to Central Florida on Monday night. The building we have is a multi-purpose facility, so we always know there could be conflicts. When you're playing in the NIT, those are the things you have to deal with, he said. The NCAA owns and manages the NIT, and working with ESPN, schedules the game around the larger NCAA tournament, Brown said. The dates are predictable. The first round of the NIT is played on the Tuesday and Wednesday following the NCAA tournament's Selection Sunday, this year March 12th, Brown said. The second round games are played from Thursday of that week through the following Monday, and the third round games are Tuesday and Wednesday. But Brown and Alstead said State Farm Center has never held open blocks of dates for a potential NIT game. Alstead said the basketball staff contacted him about a month ago to check available NIT dates. Even though we work with the State Farm Center and help manage that and work with them on blocking out dates so it's available for games, the first priority isn't always blocking out for NIT games, Brown said. In all honesty, our goals aren't to host NIT games every year. Our goals are to play in the NCAA tournament. It is asking a lot when they're trying to schedule other programming, Brown said. Moving tonight's third-round game up a day to Tuesday wasn't possible, Brown said, as it would have meant back-to-back games for both teams. And State Farm Center needed time to turn the arena around for 42nd Street. After defeating Boise State on Monday night, the Illini left for Orlando on Tuesday. It would have been easier from a logistics standpoint to not have to travel to Orlando on such a short turnaround, Brown said. The team has been forced on the road before during the NIT, once when the arena hosted a circus, another year by a concert, and more recently because of the massive renovations project there, Brown said. The Broadway series, which also included Once on March 6th and Pippin on April 14th, is booked months in advance through multiple agencies, Olstead said. Broadway does well for us, he said, adding that it's part of the arena's commitment to a diverse lineup of shows. Among Big Ten schools, only Illinois, Ohio State, and Penn State have athletic facilities that serve as multipurpose arenas, Olstead said. And that versatility helped the U of I land Garth Brooks for four shows next month. The arena has been working on it for 2 days, keeping multiple dates open until the singer decided on late April. You won't see that at Iowa or Purdue, Olstead said. We're the smallest market this tour is playing. In a related story, we have the headline, Trip Too Long for Many, including Starr's family. Prior to Monday night's NIT win against Boise State, Illinois fans crowded around TV screens in the concourses at State Farm Center, watching the thrilling finish to Illinois State's game against Central Florida. But after the Knights stunned ISU in the closing seconds, those fans made their way back to their seats, bummed out that the quarterfinal matchup between Illinois and Illinois State was not to be. Few were more disappointed than Malcolm Hill Sr., the father of Illini star guard Malcolm Hill. Had the Redbirds taken care of business, the elder Hill would have been in attendance tonight at Redbird Arena, making the 165-mile drive from his St. Louis area home. I was rooting hard for Illinois State, Hill said. It would have been a great game for the state of Illinois. Instead, Hill will watch from his couch when the Illini play tonight on the road against Central Florida, unable to make the trip to Orlando, Florida with such a short turnaround. It's tough because I wanted to be there for Malcolm, but he understands, and we've had talks about why I can make some games, Hill said. The players are everyday people from everyday families, and when things like this happen, you have to make financial decisions for your household and where you stand financially. For the record, Hill said he makes good money as an administrator at Belleville Township School District 201, but a trip to Florida during spring break season with less than 48 hours' notice just wasn't in the budget. Round-trip flights from St. Louis to Orlando today started at $520, and good luck finding a reasonably priced hotel room this time of year. I've got a lot of bills to pay, Hill said. Malcolm understands that. Makanda Hill, Malcolm's mother, has been to every home game and most road contests this season, including Rutgers and the Big Ten tournament in Washington, D.C. But she won't be at the 10,000-seat CFE Arena in Orlando tonight either. And I have a dog, so I'd have to take it to a kennel, and I just got back from D.C. a week or so ago, so that's a quick turnaround, she said. Makanda Hill consulted with other frequent flying Illini family members, including Jaylon Tate's parents, Terry James and Bonnie Johnson, who have missed just a handful of games, home and away, during Tate's four-year run. They're all sitting this round out, but should the Illini win tonight and earn a trip to the NIT semifinals in New York, Makanda Hill will likely be there. I'm thinking positive that it won't be his last game and they'll continue to play, she said. The plan is to make it out to New York. Player parents aren't the only ones who had to contend with travel challenges. The uncertain nature of the NIT schedule makes for a logistical nightmare for the team itself when it comes to securing transportation and accommodations. U of I Director of Basketball Operations James Herring knew this scenario was a possibility after Illinois opened the NIT with a home win against Valparaiso on March 14th. So he began preparing long before the Illini even took the floor against Boise State on Monday night. I started making phone calls for hotels last week and didn't really have much success because of spring break, Herring said. After five or six inquiries, Herring finally found a hotel with 20 rooms available near the UCF campus. He booked them all. The good news is it worked out where we don't need any more rooms than that, Herring said. Not long after Illinois' win on Monday, Herring was on the phone with a company called Shorts Travel, which handles transportation and accommodations on behalf of the NCAA and NIT during tournament play. Herring put in a request for a plane to charter Illinois from Savoy to Orlando at 3 p.m. Tuesday. The Illini ended up getting a 3:30 p.m. flight on a 30-seat plane, slightly smaller than the one they charter throughout the season. "It's a little bit different than we're used to," he said, "but with the short notice, we'll take it." Holly Stalkup, Illinois Assistant Athletic Director for Event Management, assisted Herring with booking travel to Orlando. She said the NIT covers the cost of 25 people traveling during the tournament. Illinois has a party of 30 on this trip. "Anything over the cost of that 25, we'd pay for that," Stalkup said. "Once everything is done, they'll send us a bill, and we'll cover whatever additional costs there are." On the front page, we also have news about the proposed federal budget. The headline is, "Agencies Serving Seniors Wary. They hope Trump alters course on cuts." Agencies serving older adults in East Central Illinois don't see much to like in President Trump's budget proposal, but they're not hitting the panic button yet. Three big potential losers in the budget are RSVP, a program that matches senior volunteers who have time to give with agencies that need the help, meal programs for senior citizens, and the Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program. Susan Reel, executive director of the East Central Area Agency on Aging, said a nearly 18% cut in Health and Human Services could effectively force a reduction of more than $100,000 annual meals served to older adults in 16 area counties. On a per-person basis, she said, that would impact about 1,400 of the 7,500 people served by home delivery and congregate meal sites. "It's serious," she said. Meal programs for seniors in the 16 counties, which include Champaign, Clark, Coles, Cumberland, Douglas, DeWitt, Edgar, Ford, Iroquois, Livingston, McLean, Macon, Moultrie, Piatt, Shelby, and Vermilion, are administered by a handful of different agencies with a mix of funding sources, Reel said. Both federal Community Development Block Grant and Older Americans Act funding help pay for senior nutrition programs. But the biggest funding source is Older Americans Act funding, administered by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Reel said. There wasn't a specific mention of Older Americans Act funding or nutrition programs, such as Meals on Wheels, in the Trump budget. But Reel said, "We're a discretionary grant, and we're a target." State payments to be determined. The RSVP program administered by Family Service of Champaign County would lose the bulk of, or potentially all of, its funding, according to Family Service of Champaign County Executive Director Cheryl Bouch. RSVP, short for Retired and Senior Volunteer Program, is funded through the Corporation for National and Community Service, which would be cut in the Trump budget, she said. Another 28% of the RSVP budget comes from the state, Bouch said, but it's unclear whether the state funding would continue without federal dollars. Plus, she said, the state hasn't paid anything to cover the RSVP program beyond December 31, 2016, and it's unknown when the next payment is coming until a new state budget is passed. This program matches adults 55 and older with more than 100 nonprofit and public agencies in Champaign, Piatt, and Douglas counties that need the help, and it has about 500 active volunteers, Bouch said. Family Service alone relies on hundreds of volunteers to help deliver meals in Champaign-Urbana and Savoy for Meals on Wheels and for transportation help for seniors, she said. Some of this volunteer help might continue without the program, Bouch said, but it's RSVP that keeps in touch with the agencies, knows their volunteer help needs, matches available older adults with agencies, and fills in some extras to help make it happen, for example, mileage reimbursement or lunch for a needy adult volunteer. "What we're trying to do is eliminate the financial barriers for an older person who has the time to volunteer," she said. More at stake. The Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program, or LIHEAP, is funded through federal HHS and state dollars. And under eligibility rules, financially qualified adults 60 and over are first in line to apply in September for help paying power bills. It's one of more than 60 programs that will be eliminated in the Trump budget proposal. Dawn Rear, LIHEAP program manager in Champaign County, said LIHEAP has served thousands of people this heating season to date, and losing it would be a big impact. The Piecemeal Senior Nutrition Program, which provides a meal a day for 1,400 older folks in East Central Illinois, is partly funded with federal dollars. But its director said this is still early in the budget process. At this point, we don't know how we're going to be affected. And my hope is by the time a federal budget is completed, it will provide the respect our seniors deserve, said Piecemeal Director Barbara Wiley. Piecemeal is 40% funded with Older Americans Act money, 40% with local money, some of which comes from Community Development Block Grant funding, and 20% from suggested donations for the meals, Wiley said. Most of the people who are getting meals are hardworking people who have contributed to society, Wiley said. They deserve the support of their communities. Bausch said Meals on Wheels for Champaign, Urbana, and Savoy would be unaffected by a federal cut. That program receives zero federal funding. We do receive additional federal funding through the Older Americans Act for some of our services, she said. I have not heard anything about whether that funding is included or impacted by the president's budget. At this point, we're still kind of in a wait and see on that. Amy Brown, CEO of CHRIS Healthy Aging Center, said that agency's biggest concern in the Trump budget is its Meals on Wheels program, which serves 266 meals a day and has multiple funding sources through Older Americans Act funding is the largest one. The agency's board will have to discuss this, she said, but to keep programs alive and healthy and people out of nursing homes, we really have no place else to turn for these chunks of money. Finally, on page one, we have a story about the Urbana mayoral race. Hopefuls differ on process for police chief. Chief Connolly announces he's resigning soon. Mayoral candidate Diane Marlin and Rex Bradfield were surprised with a new platform this week, how they'll pick the next city's next police chief. Chief Patrick Connolly announced Monday that he'll resign April 14th to focus on a family medical condition and spend more time with long-distance relatives. After the April 4th mayoral election, either Marlin or Bradfield will select a replacement that city council members will vote on for final approval. Until then, Deputy Chief Sylvia Morgan will fill in for Connolly once he leaves. The next chief is scheduled to make $131,837 for fiscal 2017. Both candidates said filling the position as soon as possible is a top priority. We really need to get that filled and move on, Marlin said. Marlin, a council member and the Democratic candidate, said she'd search for a replacement internally, and to some extent externally as well. Bradfield, an engineer and the Republican candidate, said his process would have more of a local focus. Marlin said her selection would absolutely involve public input, in addition to recommendations from city staff and Urbana Police. The police chief is one of the most high-profile heads of a department we have, so it's important to be open about it and open to input, Marlin said. Bradfield said he'll consider public input's benefits, but give priority to guidance from the Urbana Police Department and city staff. He'd also like to hire Connolly to advise in the selection process for about a month after his resignation day. I've always believed that the city should look within first, at employees who've already devoted time and their lives to the city and are looking to move up the ladder, Bradfield said, noting that he'd also look at Champaign and Savoy if need be. The first people you want to interview are the ones you know, are familiar with problems of the area. Connolly was lauded by Mayor Laurel Prussing for his community building work and attendance at after-hours neighborhood meetings. Marlin said she wants the next chief to continue in that vein. I believe in community-based policing and outreach, keeping channels of communication open with people, and building trust within the community, she said. Bradfield said he'd let the next chief decide if they want to focus on outreach in a similar fashion. A search committee can be formed, but isn't required to fill this position. Marlin said she's open to the idea, but Bradfield said he isn't at all. There are too many committees, Bradfield said. If I do anything else, I'd talk to sheriffs and chiefs in the neighboring cities, maybe a council member in charge of committees that police report to. That completes page one news, so we'll move on to more local news. In the B section, we have reports on a Champaign house fire. Two dogs saved by quick thinking duo. Quick thinking by two men helped two dogs escape a house fire in Champaign. According to a fire department report, at 5:46 p.m. Tuesday, flames initially seen on the outside of the house at 516 West Beardsley Avenue had extended into the attic. The seven occupants were not home. Nobody was reported injured. Paul Barnes and Stan Sally were working on a car across the street when they saw smoke. We were working on a car trying to get it started when I turned around and saw a fire, Barnes said. I know the family that lives there. I ran across the street and kicked the door in. I called the dogs to me because they know me, and both of them came running out of the home. Then Barnes and Sally ran inside the house, going partway upstairs to see if anyone were home. They didn't find anybody and ran back out, waiting for firefighters to arrive. There is a man, his fiancée, and five kids living there, Barnes said. It turned out the kids were at the park at the time. Barnes said the dogs were soon returned to the family. Firefighters had the blaze extinguished by 6:17 p.m., according to the report. Total damage was estimated at $45,000 to the home and $12,500 to its contents. Deputy Fire Marshal Randy Smith said investigators remained at the scene late Tuesday night to determine the cause. From the Champaign County Circuit Court, court date set for alleged Lego thief. A Chicago man has been issued a notice to appear in court after allegedly stealing 147 toys from a rental business last month. Ralph Stout, 52, has been charged with retail theft for allegedly stealing the toys from the Rantoul Walmart on at least two occasions. He's scheduled to appear in Champaign County Circuit Court on April 5th. Rantoul Police Sergeant Justin Baus said Stout is also a suspect in the theft of toys from the Urbana Walmart. Baus said Rantoul Police were contacted on March 1st by Walmart officials, who said on two occasions in February, a man came into the store and stole 147 Lego miniature figures. Through the video, we were able to identify his particulars, but didn't know the man's identity, Baus said. A few days later, Walmart officials said this same person had stolen some items at the Rantoul Walmart, but had also gotten his car serviced and used his name and identified himself as Ralph Stout. Stout was allegedly stealing the toys by putting them in his pockets. Baus said police were able to contact Stout, and on March 14th, he traveled to Rantoul where he was charged. He would not give a statement about the alleged theft, Baus said. The toys have not been recovered. It sounds like these Lego miniatures might have some aftermarket value, depending on which figure it is, Baus said. They might sell for as high as $40 a piece. Retail theft is a Class 1 misdemeanor, punishable by up to 364 days in the county jail. Man allegedly broke into cars, stole two iPads. A Champaign man faces felony charges in connection with taking iPads from two vehicles. Dylan Jordan Smith, 20, who listed an address in the 1000 block of West Vine Street, was charged on Monday with two counts of burglary. According to an Urbana police report, officers were called to the 500 block of Griggs in Urbana at 9 a.m. August 16th. The victim reported he left his Toyota Camry in a parking lot at 6:30 p.m. the night before. When he returned the next morning, the front passenger side window had been broken and an Apple iPad Air 2 was missing. Urbana police investigators found a fingerprint on a book that was next to where the iPad had been. A police lab said the fingerprint belonged to Smith. Then on January 24th, a victim told Champaign police he saw a man wearing a gray hooded sweatshirt on his security camera going through his Kia Sorento at 2:14 a.m. in the 900 block of West Vine Street in Champaign. An iPad Air was missing from the vehicle. Police investigators traced a GPS from the stolen iPad Air to Smith's address. Officers went to the location and saw a car in the driveway that a police computer identified as associated with Smith. When police compared a photo of Smith to the picture from the security video, they looked similar. Police then found a pawn report showing Smith selling an iPad at Eco ATM in Marketplace Shopping Center. A photo taken of Smith there showed him wearing the same gray hooded sweatshirt seen in the security video. Urbana police then arrested Smith on Friday. Also from the courts, court date set for gun drug charges. A Michigan man is due back in court on May 9th after state troopers allegedly found a stolen, loaded gun in his car. Nelson Javier Valentin Caban, 25, who listed an address in the 4700 block of Livernois Street, Detroit, was charged on Monday with unlawful use of a weapon, possession of a stolen firearm, possession of cannabis, possession of incomplete assignment of title of a vehicle, driving 80 miles per hour in a 70 mile per hour zone, and not having a driver's license. Valentin Caban's bond was set at $30,000. According to a state police report, state troopers pulled over a southbound 2002 Volvo, driven by Valentin Caban, just north of the Market Street exit on Interstate 57 in rural Champaign, at 12:41 a.m. Sunday. Valentin Caban was unable to produce a driver's license. When a trooper detected the odor of raw cannabis coming from the car, the vehicle was searched. Police found some suspected cannabis in the center console. In a pouch attached to the driver's seat, police found a loaded revolver that police say had been reported as stolen in Detroit. As a result, police arrested Valentin Caban. From the city of Champaign, we have Bristol Park meeting on Thursday. The Bristol Park Neighborhood Steering Committee will meet Thursday for an update on the area's redevelopment project. Jim Roberts of AHDVS Developers will give an update on the timeline and provide a preliminary site plan and conceptual unit design characteristics. The meeting will take place at Human Kinetics, 1607 North Market Street, Champaign, from 5:45 to 7:30 p.m. In addition, representatives of the John Lee Johnson family will be at the meeting to discuss integrating Johnson's history of Champaign community advocacy work into the redevelopment project. From the Fisher School Board, new officials' contracts approved. The Fisher School Board approved a 3-year contract with John Kelly to become junior-senior high school principal, and a 1-year pact with Jake Palmer to be K-12 Dean of Students, High School Athletic Director. Kelly replaces current principal Tom Schallenberger, who will retire June 30th. The board also approved a 3-year contract with Superintendent Barb Thompson. In Rantoul, the Village Board formally approved changes to Rantoul's microloan program. A loan minimum will be $7,500, while the maximum would increase from $50,000 to $100,000. And in Ludlow, the school board approved a 10-year health and life safety report that calls for $54,600 worth of work on the school building. We're at the end of our first half hour now. We'll take a short break, and then I'll be returning with the second half hour of the News Gazette for Wednesday, March 22nd, 2017. Please stay tuned.